Hi, I'm Adam Walker.
And I'm Sanjay Parekh.
And this is Tech Talk, y'all, the podcast where we talk about technology and startups with some Southern flair.
Do we actually have flair or we just talk?
I'm going to start talking in a fake accent from time to time, just randomly, just to add the flair right there.
There you go. And it'll
it's
be
going to happen.
Pieces of flair. Oh, no, you got to stop that.
I can't do that again.
That's not going to work.
That was really bad.
So what do we got? So I think the first thing we wanted to mention was listeners, which there are, as of last episode, I think 880,
At least, yeah.
Something like that. So close to 900 again. We've now got an email list. So in case you don't listen to us off of a podcasting.
I don't think that's a thing.
Podcatcher program?
Yeah, sure.
Podcasting?
I'm going to go with it.
Podcasting, coin listening app, something like that.
You can get it by email.
You can get it by email. You can subscribe to the email. And even if you do listen to the podcast on one of those apps, you might want to get the email.
Couldn't hurt.
Because you'll get the email right when the episode comes out within an hour or so. But more importantly, it has links to all the things that we talk about.
That's right.
So if you don't want to look in the show notes in your podcasting listening application, you can get the email and then be able to click away on your mobile phone.
And so sign up today.
Device. Yeah,
on
exactly.
Tech Talk Y'all.
Tech Talk Y'all. It's right at the top. Just sign up there.
Yeah, techtalkyall.com.
So what's the first thing we want to talk about?
So it's a heavier topic is the first topic. So some interesting legislation for us to maybe discuss, debate.
That impacts us right here.
That impacts us directly. So it's House Bill 509.
And that would be Georgia House Bill.
Georgia House Bill 509. And it's titled the Human Trafficking Prevention Act.
And I'm definitely against human trafficking. That 100%, is not a good thing.
100%. I've done a decent amount of work against human trafficking with some nonprofits here in Atlanta.
That's great. That's awesome. Fact,
yeah. So there's
the problem, though, is
nonprofit called Street Grace I've worked with. So
Street Grace.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Good plug for them.
Just a plug. Yeah.
The problem is that the bill is totally not about human trafficking.
It's about blocking internet.
It's about blocking your internet and
right.
doing a lot of things that, look, some of the things I think I'm a big fan of. I think you are too.
Right.
Right. So one of the things they want to block is child pornography.
Yep. And I'm a fan of blocking that and that severely punishing those who try to engage in that.
Exactly.
Right.
I think it's going to be hard to find. Well, I think if we found somebody that was against that, they would probably be one of the people that we'd want to punish.
Participating
so.
In it.
So
yeah,
I think that's an easy sell. But the problem is that the way that this bill is written basically tells you that the people that wrote it have no idea or understanding of technology. They don't understand what is possible, what is not possible.
Right.
So basically what the gist of it, listeners, is that they want providers to provide a device that will block obscene material,
right?
Which first of all is not even defined. So what
true.
Is obscene?
That's
one person's
right.
obscene is another person's not obscene.
Right.
And if it doesn't do, if they sell devices that don't have this ability, then the attorney general of the state of Georgia can sue them.
Right.
But also if you want to not have the blocking, you have to pay $20 to be unblocked. And the money all goes into the Georgia Mental Health and Addiction Fund or something like that. Which also, by the way,
which
not
is
related to human
strange,
trafficking.
Sort of strange, because it's not related to human trafficking.
At all.
Right. And so there's several problems with this type of legislation.
Only several?
Well, it several that spring to mind immediately.
Right.
The primary one is that it's virtually impossible to do well in terms of blocking these sites without accidentally blocking a whole lot of other sites. Like, for example, you know, I've dabbled lots of times with software that's going to keep my kids safe from finding certain things on the internet and whatever else. But then, you know, you've got these settings on there and okay, it's going to block pornography and it's going to block this. It's going to block violence or whatever. But then I try to go read like a basic news article like AJC.com or something super random and it's blocked. And so,
and it's probably because one point they had some article that in the filter and then they blocked the whole site.
Exactly. Or they use some word or some phrase or something that triggered the system. And the problem is that if you try to, you know, use software, and you'd have to use software in this situation to block objectionable material, you're going to end up inadvertently and accidentally blocking other sites that probably make their livelihood off of website traffic.
Right.
And there's just not a good way to do it.
I
think this is a problem that needs to be solved 100%. And I think we need to work really hard to solve this problem. But software blocking, I don't think is the way to do it. I don't see a scalable way to do that.
Yeah. And the other problem that I think really annoys me is that this kind of issue then also impacts startups.
Right.
And a startup does not have the bandwidth or money or the wherewithal to be able to do these kinds of things. Then be under the thumb of potentially the attorney general
right.
of the state of Georgia and suing you is really going to mean that a lot of startups here in Georgia are either going to not do their thing here or they're going to move to another state because
they can't implement the software. So you're saying
you don't want to go to jail, right? I mean, you don't want to go to jail because of something you're doing. And
you're saying they can't implement, like they don't have the time, like they're building a startup, they're building a new platform. They don't have the ability to then figure out an algorithm to filter out all this other stuff on top of that. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah, exactly. They might not necessarily. You think about some kind of social service. Right. You don't know what users are going to post, and they post one thing that
and then you're done.
You didn't approve of, but they, you know, that's a social, they did it, and the attorney general is going to come after you. And there's an example of this that happened, I guess, in the opposite case on Facebook, where there was a picture of the child from My Lai in Vietnam, and the child is naked and fleeing the village, and it's on fire. And it's a very important historical photo. It's not child pornography, and Facebook blocked it. Claiming child pornography. And we don't, I don't think we know if this was an algorithm or if it was a person. And if it was a person, it was a person that didn't understand history and didn't take
the impact of classes. That particular photo.
Exactly. And so they apologized and unblocked that photo. But I think that kind of goes to that broader point of, are we going to block things then that affect the way that we view the world and history and everything else?
Right.
In an improper way.
And it's hard. I mean, when you start talking about algorithms, I mean, they're just going to be imperfect, you know, and, but you can't human curate a list either. I mean, there's just, it grows too fast.
It's impossible.
So I don't see how this legislation could be implemented well. I'm all for stopping.
I don't even think I can see how it could be implemented poorly. Honestly.
That's true. If it's even possible in any way, shape or form.
I mean, we're just, you know, at my house, I've got a gigabit connection to the internet. Like in
that does
theory,
not surprise me in any way, shape, or form.
I was the first to jump on that bandwagon when it was available. But think about how much stuff you can download on a gig connection.
Right.
And how much sorting and filtering and everything else that would have to happen.
Yeah.
Like you, I can. I'm worried about that too with kids and everything. But, you know, that's your job as a parent to deal with that part of it. And to teach your kids the right and wrong.
Well, and I think we put the filters on as a parent, right? To keep our kids safe. And then if it does block, you know, some very benign sites, so be it. And we deal with that.
Right.
But we're doing it at a local level. When you try to implement it sort of at the top level,
a lot
more trouble happens.
Exactly. The things that I do in my home, I would not try to foist on you or on my neighbors or on anyone else, because it's really your decision to figure out how to do that stuff.
Right. Yeah.
So the point of all this is, if you are for or against, which is more likely what we are, this bill, you should call your politicians, your legislators, and tell them what you think about this bill. Tell them what you think it's going to do in terms of impact to startups and business and all of those other things. And if you think it's not feasible to do this, you should let them know that too. If you think it is feasible, then you should probably start a company around this.
Right, that'd be amazing.
You're going to make $1 billion.
If this is feasible, I would support it 1,000%. Just to say it right there.
Block the bad stuff, leave the good stuff.
If it's possible to do that effectively, it's got my support. I just don't see how it is in this current technological state.
Well, you know, and one last thing on this too, is that, you know, we always talk about government intervention and people's choice and stuff. This is basically saying that the people don't have a choice. You don't have a choice to do the things that you want to do.
But that's another discussion, my friend. Right?
That is another discussion.
and possibly a more dangerous one and not technology related.
So. Totally not. So we're going to move on.
But you did. Did you want to mention, isn't there an event here regarding this?
You're right. There is an event here. And here being at Prototype Prime, I don't think we've mentioned that yet. We're recording this at Prototype Prime, and this event is at Prototype Prime. We're partnering with our friends over at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and I believe the event is April 5th. We will have a link in the show notes to be able to RSVP for that event, and you can come. The fine folks at EFF are going to be here to talk about this bill, and I'm sure they'll be happy to talk about anything else that you want to talk about that relates to electronic privacy, freedom, surveillance, and all those kinds of things. We've had a couple of events with them already. They've been great, and so we're looking forward to having this third event here.
All right. So moving on to, you know, other less heavy things, let's discuss the Amazon outage. There was an Amazon S3 outage, or I guess an Amazon cloud outage.
Sorry. I typed Amazon wrong here in the show notes.
That's okay. We'll forgive
you.
It's
kind of a joke.
So we're getting to that. So there's an Amazon outage, and it took down just a huge amount of services. So Amazon has, you know, web services, servers, and a ton of startups and small companies use them to put their software on.
Big companies, small companies. You're probably impacted by it every day. Like Netflix runs all of their stuff off of Amazon servers.
I didn't realize Netflix did. That's amazing.
They did a long time ago. The New York Times, here's an interesting story. The New York Times years ago, they wanted to digitize their entire old archives of the newspaper. And they figured out it was going to be, I don't know, a couple of million dollars if they bought all the hardware and ran it internally. They did it on Amazon Web Services for a fraction of the cost. Holy it was like $100,000 or something.
Fantastic.
It was unbelievable. Yeah. It was really amazing.
Amazon hosts a ton of services and had this major outage, a week or two ago. I mean, it affected my company. I mean, we do digital marketing and we use a particular service to mark up, you know, all of the designs and what they should be, how they should function.
Yeah.
And we owed that to a client that particular day and we could not do it. The service was down.
And your excuse was Amazon Web Services ate my homework. Listen,
call Jeff. I was like, call Jeff Bezos. Like, he's the guy. Just give him a call.
They ate our homework.
Exactly. So why did this happen?
So it was a typo. Somebody in one of their, and they haven't identified the person, probably good for them.
They fired the person what they've done. Well, let's be realistic here.
Maybe, yeah.
You are done.
I don't know. If they fired the person, you'd expect a blog post from that person to
maybe explain what happened. They signed a letter.
Yeah, probably. So this person, whoever they are, the nameless person, was trying to take a few machines offline in either one or more of their data centers. And they had a typo in the command and they took down almost all the machines.
See, that is scary on so many levels. Number one, it's scary that there's one person that can take down all the machines and impact
the internet.
Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of businesses, like impacting millions of dollars of commerce, if not more than that.
And it wasn't just a few minutes. It was hours and hours.
Oh, it was almost a whole day.
Yeah.
But one person with one command at one company can do that. Like, that's kind of mildly terrifying.
So, you know what I would actually say is, I don't know that I blame that person.
No, I blame the setup.
I blame the setup and whoever wrote the software that allowed them to do the command and not get a confirmation of are you really sure? Because this is 98% of the capacity at this data center that you are about to take offline.
Yeah, this is going to ruin X number of companies' lives. Do you really want to do this now? Right?
And they might have wanted to do it. There might be cases where they should do it.
Sure.
Because there's some big other issue.
Right. But you need some...
Maybe
even a double, with the whole nuclear codes and all the movies, at least two people turning the key, right? I mean, maybe there need to be two people giving commands
There should be two keys, definitely. Yeah.
This is kind of scary.
This is the nuclear option, right? You turn down a data center.
And it's the power of Amazon. Yeah. I mean, Amazon runs so much more of the web than we even realize.
Because it's so striking. Underneath. You don't really see it.
Yeah.
And for so long, they haven't really broken out the revenues that they get off of Amazon Web Services. I think they've started to now a little bit. It's huge. It's growing. I think from what I hear, it's growing faster than any other part of their business.
Oh, I can totally believe it.
Yeah.
100%. So... Yeah, it's just fascinating. That's it. That's all I gotta say. It's fascinating.
There's nothing you can do as a listener. It's
you should just know this.
You should know this. And I think you should also know that if you're running one of these companies or you're using one of these companies, you are reliant on everybody else in the chain. And if there is a weak link in that chain, be it on the operation side, be it on the data security side, you are therefore exposed to that.
That's right.
And if you're running a business or even your personal life, you should be thinking about that and figuring out how can you mitigate those kinds of issues.
Amazon ate my homework. Sorry.
Yeah.
That's what I got.
There you go.
Okay. What's next? We got Airbnb and Peloton evaluations. So let's talk about that.
They are crazy insane.
I love some raining, crazy evaluations.
Raining money over here. $1 billion plus for both of them. And so here's the interesting thing about Peloton, if you don't know, is that the founder, I think it's a sole founder, he's actually a Georgia Tech grad.
Cool.
He got out in 1994, industrial engineering, went on to this little weird school up in Boston, Harvard, got an MBA there. Nothing great there. But here he's, I would consider him one of us. Actually, I think he's from Florida, but since he was here at Georgia Tech, he's one of us. He's in Atlanta. So Peloton's now an Atlanta startup. Is what I've decided, even though they're based out of New York.
That's the Southern flair right there, my friend.
There you go. Yeah. It's one of ours now. But, it's kind of amazing. So I think the story here is that, first of all, you would never see companies like this before, 10, 15, 20 years ago. They would have gone public by now.
For sure.
And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. The registration requirements, Dodd-Frank and all those kinds of things have, I think, pushed companies to stay private for longer. But I think also there's a lot of hubris around some of these companies.
Oh, yeah.
And people throwing money at them and willing to buy in at these valuations that are huge.
So, I mean, they're doing some big stuff. I mean, well, Airbnb also, has now raised over $1 billion in capital and it's pushing back their IPO. I mean, normally, you'd have to go IPO to raise that kind of cash and they don't have to. They can just keep rolling in the money. So, but what I was interested in Peloton and what they produce. So how would you describe that exactly?
So it's a fairly expensive bike, about $2,000 that right. you pay a monthly fee like, on, uh-huh. and then you compete against other people that also have the bike yep. with a trainer.
Isn't it like an online class, basically? Like you've yeah. got your little bike in like your little space, but and you've got the screen in front of you, and it's like this class
yeah.
that you're taking because you want that sort of live instructor sort of experience.
Right.
But it's $2,000 and $40 a month.
Compete against other people too.
But here's what I don't get. Why do you need an expensive bike? Like, why don't you just have an iPad and an app and some, you know, maybe you like get some little sticky thing.
Oh, Adam, you're just so 1990s.
Like, why do you need this expensive piece of equipment? Like, it's striking. Who's going to buy?
Apparently a lot of people.
A lot of people a lot wealthier than me, my friend, yeah. are going to buy. Like, I would never in a million years, but yeah. I don't know anybody that would buy this.
So the other amazing thing that I saw was, and maybe this is part of the reason why you get this bike, is they were talking about people on there that do the exercise, I don't know, the class, I don't know what you right. call it, up to 15 times a week. 15 times a week. So if you include all 7 days, that's twice a day. I don't know about you, but I work out maybe once a day.
Does this thing like inject drugs or something to get you like hyper addictive? Like you sit maybe. Down and like there's, you know, something that just, I'm not even going to go there. But like how do you get so into something like this that you're going to do it 15 times a week? Like that's pretty intense.
I know. If you consider just 5 days a week, that's three times a day. Like I don't have that kind of time.
I don't have that
sit
kind
down
of time.
On a bike. No. two to three times a day.
They're in great shape. So
they are
hey,
in
listen,
great shape.
If you want to be in great shape, you just get this $2,000 bike.
They're going to live a long time, but most of the time is going to be spent on the bike.
That's true. And I can't endorse it. It's just crazy. Just yeah. go get on a bike and go outside, people. Like, come on. Like, it's nice outside. Like,
it's been a little cold lately, but yeah.
Okay, well, that's
in
true.
Theory, it's been nice outside. Yeah, it's interesting. I think Airbnb is a different story than Peloton.
Yeah, for sure.
I think they've done some great things. They've had some challenges, of course.
Absolutely.
You know, when this whole travel ban thing came up, they opened up Airbnb spaces for free.
Yeah, I saw that.
For stranded travelers. I thought that was a great thing.
Yeah, I saw that was amazing.
You know, help people out. And I think they've very much tried to stay true to their mission of helping people. And I think the interesting story, here's a little startup story on them, is the founders were not technical. They actually read books. This is what I heard, is that they read books and figured out how to code their first site to get the whole thing going.
Wow. Now initially. That's impressive.
So I think the lesson here to the listeners is, even if you're not technical and you have a technology idea,
do it.
Look, if you are motivated enough, you can figure out how
you
to make
it
done.
Figure it out. That's right.
And if you don't get it done on your own, then that means you're definitely just not motivated enough, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what entrepreneurs do. It doesn't matter what the obstacle is. That's our job, is to figure out how to get around, get over, get through obstacles.
Overcome.
And I think the founders of Airbnb have totally shown that.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I'm a big Airbnb fan. I once rented a houseboat off of there.
Really? Recently. Okay. Yeah, so interesting. Cool. I've never stayed on Airbnb.
Well, you should remedy that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So the houseboat, did you actually go anywhere? Or was
no,
just
you had to hire a captain to go somewhere, and that was a whole thing. And I was just like, I just want to hang out on a houseboat.
Where was
me
this?
And some friends hung out. I was on Lake Lanier. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Hung out on a houseboat on Lake Lanier. It was great. We had a blast.
Oh, that's interesting. We're going to have to talk about that sometime.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Fair enough.
What's next?
All right. We got WikiLeaks CIA document.
This is a little scary.
No, I don't know what you're talking about. I love it when the CIA spies on me.
So
do it all the time.
In theory, the CIA is not listening on any of us.
They're definitely not listening to this podcast.
Well, who is? Because in theory, the CIA is not allowed, legally not allowed, to spy on U.S. soil.
Right.
Of course, neither was the NSA.
Right.
And we kind of know about that.
Yeah. That's my air quotes voice.
So yeah, exactly.
Go ahead.
So what this article talks about is the fact that the CIA had a bunch of vulnerabilities. They're called zero days, right? So vulnerabilities that nobody else knows about.
Such a great name.
Zero day.
Zero day.
Zero day.
You start calling stuff that.
And you know, we had companies here in town. There used to be a startup, Endgame Systems, that trafficked in zero day vulnerabilities.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And they got a bunch of money. I think it was Kleiner or Sequoia.
All
it
right.
was one of those that funded them. And the company ended up moving to DC. But the founder, and why am I blanking on his name? I'm totally blanking on his name.
All right, well, back to the CIA document. Go ahead.
Anyways, the founder is still here, by the way, doing yet another startup, security-based startup. But talking about the CIA, so there's companies that will sell these kinds of vulnerabilities.
Right.
And it's unclear whether these were vulnerabilities the CIA found or if they bought or whatever. But there's a lot of scary stuff in here where they figured out ways to get your TV to listen in on you.
Your smart TV?
Your smart TV.
Okay.
And so they could, you know, a lot of these smart TVs, you can have a little voice assistant.
Right.
And you can say, tune to channel 3. So I don't have any of that. I actually have smart TVs, but we don't use the remotes with the smartness in it.
Okay.
The audio smartness. We use the Logitech Harmony, which unifies all the stuff.
Okay.
Maybe I should have used that as my app recommendation at the end of the show, but here's a bonus one for you.
Yeah, Logitech Harmony.
Logitech Harmony. So it runs the Roku and it runs the TV and it runs the Sonos. It runs all the stuff together.
Nice.
In one remote. So we don't have any issues with that stuff, but you got to worry about the things that listen to you all the time.
Which is, I mean, growing. I mean, I was just telling you, I just got the Amazon Echo and it listens all the time.
Which we're going to talk about in a minute.
And it's a little creepy.
Yeah, you got to worry about it. What if it gets hacked and things like that? But they also apparently figured out ways to circumvent Signal. So if you don't know Signal, you should know Signal. Mm-hmm. It's an encrypted messaging, so SMS messaging. So if both parties have Signal, you can do encrypted SMS.
Man, you're all about the app recommendations today, huh?
We're just laying
it
out.
Check this out.
I told you before the show started, I had nothing.
You said none, and now you're like,
I got all kinds of.
They're just flowing, man. They're just flowing.
Dropping them like bombs over here.
Like beats.
The interesting thing with, like beats. The interesting thing with Signal is they just added video as well.
And ooh, encrypted video.
Encrypted video chats between people. And I got to tell you, we just tried it the other day. It's super smooth. Highly recommended. No lagginess at all, even over LTE.
I kind of feel like I want to try Signal really just so I feel like a super spy.
There you go.
For that reason only.
So, but apparently the CIA has figured out how to get around Signal by not really breaking the encryption, but by infecting your phone and then capturing the audio before it hits Signal.
Oh yeah, that's not creepy at all.
And so there you go, right?
Good to know.
So, you know, it's kind of a funny thing because we do actually have a law that says that when US government agencies find vulnerabilities, they're supposed to report them to the manufacturer.
Like a really bad. Oh, okay. To the manufacturer.
Right. They're supposed to report them. Okay. No, not publicly.
Right.
They can eventually. And that's what
white
hat hackers, they do, right? They'll report them to the company, give them some time to fix it. And then they'll report the vulnerability so that people can understand why this happened. And the reason why we have that law in the books is because we recognize that, look, if the CIA knows of a vulnerability, there's very likely a chance that a criminal is going to know it, or another country's government that might have ill intentions towards us.
Right.
And so it's better for us as a country in terms of national security to fix those vulnerabilities.
Sure. Yeah, I get it.
That's not what's been happening here.
But your smart TV might be listening to you.
But now your smart TV is listening to you. So I don't know where we go from here, I think the thing for the listeners is make sure that your software is always up to date. Make sure you're doing your firmware updates on your phones, your TVs, your chew toys for your dogs, whatever else, because all of that stuff could be listening to you.
I like that startup idea, voice activated chew toy for a dog. Like I'm going to do that now.
That's not going to freak out the dog at all.
Nobody else steal that one. It's all me right there, starting up.
$1 billion idea, raise $1 billion and avoid IPO.
And I'm going to call it talkabone.com. I don't know. I'm going to stop.
You're definitely not a brandy guy.
I need to stop talking right now. I am a somewhat of a brandy guy, but not off the fly. Not like this. Come on. All right.
You're a branding guy when you have the time to
put thoughtfulness into
exactly.
It.
Yeah, not on a podcast.
That's right. Yeah, not today.
So what's next that we want to talk about?
Let's see. So big shipping company is trialing blockchain.
This is neat stuff.
Explain this one to me, actually, because I know nothing about this at all.
Yeah.
So I'm going to play the sidekick role, which I think I've been doing a good job of so far this episode. But we'll
see.
I'm
always
my
own sidekick, but that's great that you're here.
That's actually a good tagline. All right, go ahead. So what do we have here?
So if you don't know what blockchain is, you've probably heard of Bitcoin.
Yep.
And so one of the underlying technologies in Bitcoin is the blockchain. So it's a distributed ledger that tracks all of the transactions using Bitcoin. What that means is that nobody can hide away Bitcoin in a transaction. Nobody can refute a transaction because it's all agreed upon the network that this transaction happened. And so if you replay all of the transactions, you can understand exactly where and who or which wallets the Bitcoin are in.
So a paper trail for Bitcoin, basically.
Exactly. And nice. I think I misspoke. It's not necessarily who, it's which wallets have it.
Right.
So wallets, you don't know the identity of the people. So that's why Bitcoin is still anonymous.
Right.
So the interesting thing here is that if you think about shipping and shipping containers, they really work on paper.
Right.
And it's really easy to forge paper, lose paperwork, all those kinds of things. And shipping containers, we have an immense number that come into our country as well as on the seas and going into other countries.
Right.
And it's a big security hole because most containers are not scanned or not inspected. And so how do you strengthen that chain? And so part of it, and I believe the company is Maersk, M-A-E-R-S-K, Scandinavian company.
Let's say
Maersk,
go with it.
Maersk, something like that.
Yeah, you should try that with a southern draw.
Maersk.
That was better.
There you go.
That's it.
So they are trying to switch over to using a Bitcoin-based system instead of paperwork. Huh. So one of the benefits there is that inspectors would be able to get the ledgers before the ship even shows up.
Right.
Right. And then they're sure that in the chain of custody, everything has happened. So with a blockchain, every line of entry is based on the encryption hash of the line before it. Okay. So you can't change an item in the middle of the ledger.
Right.
And have it everything work.
Right.
Right. So it'll be identified right away.
Hmm.
And because it's a distributed ledger, presumably, I think they're using multiple machines. It's spread around. So if one machine gets hacked,
no big deal.
It's no big deal because the other machines will be like, no, your ledger's wrong.
Right.
And this is the right ledger because we all agree on it.
That sounds brilliant.
It's pretty neat. And I think there's a possibility there of not only saving money, but also increasing security at the same time.
Yeah. That's cool.
It's neat stuff.
I love it.
So I think that's probably, if anything, that's one of the big things that may come out of Bitcoin. It may not become the currency to end them all.
Right.
But a lot of the technology innovations that come out of it might be things that really impact daily life and improve things in general.
I would have never imagined Bitcoin affecting shipping containers.
Yeah.
That seems like two polar opposite ends of the spectrum. So that's pretty amazing.
I mean, I don't know if you realize, but the space program gave us Teflon.
I think I did realize that, actually.
Those are weird things to go together.
I think about NASA every time I cook my eggs. So, no, I really don't. But I should. Maybe I should.
You should. Yeah, they're always space eggs, aren't they?
That's great. All right. So we want to talk about ride sharing in Austin. So Austin did this sort of interesting thing recently and has, I guess, for lack of a better term, broken up with Uber and Lyft. And
they're not friends anymore.
They're not BFFs anymore.
No.
And now, you know, there's all these other kind of independent ride sharing, small, you know, Austin specific apps that are popping up. But it really kind of produces a whole lot of problems, right?
It does. So to step back a little bit, Uber and Lyft spent, this article says, $8.2 million fighting against this proposition that basically makes it so that they can't do business or they don't want to do business in Austin anymore.
Right.
And so what that's opened up is Uber and Lyft left, and now a bunch of other companies have come in to fill the gap.
Which kind of brings the question, too, like if this prop is against Uber and Lyft, how are there other companies that can compete effectively in the space with this new proposition being law?
So I think what it is that they're just using a different business model. And so one of them is Ride Austin, which is a nonprofit. And what's interesting with them is that they're taking all of their profits and redistributing them to local nonprofits and charities.
Now I love that. That's pretty cool.
So, well, obviously with 48 and 48, you're probably
a big nonprofit
fan.
Here's
where I think things fall down a little bit. One of our good friends here in Atlanta, Rob Kischuk, local startup founder.
Hey, Rob.
He was at South By, which is happening right now.
Yep.
And he tweeted
in
this.
In Austin.
In Austin.
Right.
And he tweeted about trying to get a ride to the airport. And he posted a pic of the app, and it was basically saying it was going to cost between $415 and $497.
That seems excessive.
That does. Yeah. It sounds like you should actually get a ride from Austin all the way back to Atlanta for that price.
I feel like you should have a horse-drawn carriage all the way to the airport if that's going to be with the car. And there should be like some magic around that or something.
I think this exposes the challenge here is that when you reduce competition, prices go up. It's a supply-demand curve thing, right?
Yeah.
It's economics 101.
Right. I mean, you just got to hail the old-school cab in that scenario.
Yeah.
Do the best you can.
And so Rob's follow-up tweet was, he did that. The cabbie didn't turn on the meter and then haggled for a price to take him to the airport.
But I bet that price was lower than $400.
Well, almost anything is going to be less than $400 at that point.
I think it's time to hitch a ride at that point. Just stick your thumb and start walking.
I probably would have driven to Austin from here and drove people to the airport for $497.
Now that is an interesting business idea. We should talk about that for next year.
So the challenges abound. You know, we'll see what happens with Austin, but you know, Austin, they like to keep it weird. So it is what it is.
It is what it is. That's right. All right. Well, so we're going to wrap up the show here, and we always try to do some app recommendations. So I'll begin.
What you got?
I have begun using the productivity app Todoist. So a little background. I was a hardcore OmniFocus user for about 5 years, And
OmniFocus is a Mac,
Apple only, and it's got, you know, the to-do lists and kind of productivity stuff. And I'm kind of productivity obsessed. I blog about it a lot and think about it a lot. And
do you spend more time thinking about productivity than actually being productive? Or?
Definitely not. Okay. Because that would be super counterproductive at that point. But I do think about it a lot. But I downloaded Todoist. I started looking at it. And honestly, just the user experience of it and just a handful of features just pushed me over the edge within a day.
Wow.
I scrapped OmniFocus. I've been on for 5 years. And I was like, I'm using this.
Did you
this
pay for amazing. OmniFocus?
I probably invested a good $150 in all the OmniFocus apps.
And okay.
Todoist is like $28 a year
okay.
for the premium version.
So
nice. It's cheaper. It does more stuff.
So you went premium too on Todoist?
All the way. Yeah. All the,
so I've been using,
amazing.
Okay. So I've been using Todoist for a while, but I'm still on the free cheap guy.
So the premium allows you to do two things that I particularly love. One, I can share projects with someone else using Todoist. So
okay.
I can say like my wife and I can have like a grocery shopping list or something that we share, which is cool.
Okay.
But the better one is that I can take an email and forward it to Todoist and it automatically creates a task for me based on that email.
That was the
clincher right there. I was like, I'm done with OmniFocus and this is amazing and I'm going to pay the $28 and call it good.
Okay.
Yeah, you should do that today. It's so worth it.
Yeah. Okay, I'll take a look at that.
Yeah, so Todoist, check it out. It's a link. There's a link in the show notes.
Exactly. So the app recommendation I have is not productivity focused, but it's spending focused. It's called Wallaby.
Okay.
So I just got an email from them recently and decided to try out the app. So I do the credit card shuffle, right? So I've got a handful of credit cards trying to maximize rewards and points.
Right.
Now, the key to this is that you got to make sure that you pay your credit card bill off 100% every month.
All the time, man.
The best way, you know, I've always done that, but I have all the credit card companies. They just pull their money out every month.
I just pay mine every paycheck, like twice a month.
Yeah.
I pay mine.
Oh, okay.
Just to be sure.
Okay.
I'm paranoid.
Well, I just have them pull out the full amount due every month, whenever it's due.
That's
like they're hooked into my bank account. Just take the money. I know I owe it to you. Just take it. I'm not going to not pay it.
That's great.
So the thing is that a lot of times I'll be at like the gas pump and be like, which credit card should I be using to maximize my points? And right now, in the beginning part of the year, Discover card is giving you 5% back on gas stations and some things like that.
Oh, okay.
And I just can't remember all of that stuff. There's just too much going on in life. And so Wallaby, that's Wallaby, I think. It's in the show notes.
Link in the show notes.
You can add your credit cards and you don't have to actually sync your cards if you don't want to. But if you do, you get some reminders about when payments are due and suspicious charges and things like that.
Right.
But I haven't done that. It's just strictly putting the cards in and it'll tell you in which categories you should use which cards.
Nice.
So
that's fantastic.
Maximize those rewards. Hey, it's money for nothing and you might as well take it.
That's fantastic. I love that. Okay. So wrapping up here, let us just remind you, you can sign up to get the email newsletter about the show.
Yep.
And we'd also love you to consider supporting the show by sharing it on Facebook and on Twitter and just letting your friends know that we exist.
And actually this month, a bunch of podcasts are doing this thing where they call it Tripod.
That's right.
So recommend our podcast to somebody and then mention it on Twitter or Facebook or somewhere with the hashtag Tripod that you recommended our podcast.
It's TRYPOD.
TRYPOD.
And I'd also like to mention, you can find me, Adam, at AJ Walker on Twitter. And you can also find me on my blog at adamjwalker.com.
And you can find me on Twitter. This is Sanjay at Sanjay, S-A-N-J-A-Y. I have a blog, but I don't blog so much. So
we'll work on that.
Talk about that. Yeah.
It's going to be great. And that's all we got for the day. So if you have questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. And otherwise, we'll sign off and talk to you next time.
Thanks.